Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. And good evening and welcome once again to Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience. I am your host, Willie Hassel, your gatekeeper to the dark side, your guide to the realm of the unknown, the unseen, the unthinkable. And hey, she is the always lovely, she is the mystical, and she is the mysterious.
Good evening, Willie. I'm right here.
Lynn Nickerson. How are you?
Just wonderful. Thank you. And yourself?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
Good.
You know, it was a pretty nice day today.
I got out and about,
went for a bike ride, and
yeah, it was
didn't
beautiful.
Fall off or anything.
You didn't?
No, I
survived. Oh, so you put away those training wheels?
I did. I had the training wheels taken off last week.
Wonderful.
I'm on my own now.
Good.
Yep. So, I don't know what to tell you, but
I'm proud of you, Willie.
Stand by your phone in case the hospital calls.
Okay.
All right. So, shall I introduce tonight's guest?
Please do.
All right. I'll do that. This week on Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience, it is a pleasure once again to welcome to the show Mary Joyce. Mary is the author of Underground Military Bases Hidden in the North Carolina Mountains and Cherokee Little People Are Real, as well as four other books. In addition, Mary has worked for two major metropolitan newspapers as a writer, columnist, artist, Sunday magazine editor, and feature editor. She has also written many articles for magazines, and she is the editor of the website SkyshipsOverCashiers.com, a site dedicated to all things paranormal and unusual. And let us welcome now, for I believe this is her third appearance on Spirit Radio, Mary Joyce. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Welcome, Mary.
Should I start by congratulating you on learning how to ride a bike?
Yes, that's a good start.
yes, thank you. that's a pedal bike, not a motorcycle.
Okay.
I haven't graduated that far yet.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing real well, thank you.
Good.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, I didn't realize that you were an artist as well. Did you put out something with your artistry in it, a book?
Years and years ago, there's a book that's totally out of print that I included some of my art to go along with it, but there's nothing in print now that shows my artwork.
Well, what was
it? The closest I come is to laying out pages for the Skyships website.
Oh, but what was the book?
It was called Sky Father and Son, and it was totally different than the books that we've talked about, and it was short spiritual messages that came through back in the late 90s.
Oh, wonderful. And you illustrated the whole thing then, right?
Correct.
Oh, that's nice. I'd like to get a copy of that, or at least...
Well, hard to come by.
Really?
It's going to cost you.
It's going to cost
you. If you can find one.
Well, since this is your third time on the show, we spoke about both of your wonderful books, and I thought there's so many great submissions on your site that, in case people aren't aware of that, that I wanted to highlight some of the topics on your site. And it's all really interesting current events. So I thought, you know, this would be a good opportunity to do that. So some of the things we were going to touch on tonight, we had spoken about the metal that the young woman, when she was a child, she tested. And then I wanted to get a little bit into the little people of both Tennessee and North Carolina, as well as a little bit touch on the military bases, and then perhaps the Hadron Collider. So before we get into our first topic, though, I wanted to mention that I want to make a correction. that I mistakenly typed on Facebook that Roswell, New Mexico, the crash occurred in 1948, and it actually happened in July of 1947. So it was Aztec, New Mexico that happened in 48. So that's what I had in my mind. I couldn't remember which one came first.
we'll forgive you.
Okay. But I want to set the record straight. I do know the difference.
You probably had somebody who was just real quick to want to let you know you'd made a mistake, right?
No, actually, I found it myself, and I was so embarrassed.
Oh, well, good for you. There's usually somebody out there in the wings waiting to make corrections for somebody.
Oh, you're so right about
waiting
that.
Waiting to pounce.
So I watched your wonderful video on YouTube about the two kids in Roswell who secretly tested the UFO material. So for those who aren't familiar with it, would you like to talk about what Alejandro Rojas had to say about it and then tell us about the video?
Actually, we started a YouTube channel simply because we thought this video was so good. And I originally had planned to simply tape record the interview and then write it up and post it on the website. And I was just amazed at the way the story came through. And the woman spoke with such wonderful picture painting. Mm. And she had such sincere feelings and emotions that came through in her voice. And there was no way that I could capture that in words. And so we got busy and put it together for the YouTube, because I want people to really hear it, because then you feel it. And so much of what's been done in the past about Roswell has been historical accounting. I mean, very factual, wonderful information.
True.
But this has feeling to it. This has emotion to it. This has... it's more human, if people are tired of Roswell, and they might really find this quite interesting, because believe it or not, I've only done two things since 2008 on Roswell, because in many ways it seems like it's been done so much.
Mm.
But this truly is unique, and when people have time, you can go straight to YouTube and type in Two Kids Roswell, and it'll come up for you.
Oh, what's really nice is, you know, it's eyewitness testimony, whereas so much of it out there is reading archived materials. So this is firsthand experience, which is really interesting.
Well, it took a lot of patience to get this story. I've actually known the woman since 1998. She never mentioned it to me until we started the website, skyshipsovercashers.com, in 2008. And not long after that, she just quietly told me just a little bit. She said her dad had been in the military during the Roswell time, and that she had actually handled some of the magic metal from that. And she told me just a little bit about its qualities. And the part that really caught my attention was that she was involved with another little child who was also 10. And... at one point, she actually traded Silly Putty, it's also known as Nutty Putty, for the metal. So she had it, in her own hands for a while. And you have to be quite a few years old to remember how important Silly Putty was back in those days.
Oh, but, yes.
I remember that.
I remember that.
Well, I remember it, too, but you might have a lot of listeners who... don't remember it, and it was a real novelty at the time, and apparently they couldn't even get the Silly Putty in Dayton, Ohio, which is, where Wright-Patterson is, and so the little boy briefly traded it for it, and the two of them together just did so much testing on it. I mean, they were very, very inventive for little 10-year-olds, and they took it to, they put it in the oven, they ironed it, they put it under a heavy transport vehicle that pulls the big planes. They took it to somebody who does the horseshoes for horses and had him put it in a fire. They built their own fire. I mean, they did chemicals on it. And they had this about a week, and their little minds just didn't stop. They just tried everything.
Yeah, they were pretty creative for 10-year-old kids, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
Well, their parents were both very, very smart. And the little boy, whose name is John, his father, I guess, was very brilliant when it came to science. And he was the one who was very involved in UFO investigations based at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And your readers may or may not know that that became the place where all the Roswell material went.
When it was sent.
Most people believe it's still there. Some people think maybe it's been taken somewhere else. But there's a vast underground facility there at Wright-Patterson, and that's supposedly where the material still is.
Okay, so I want to know is when did John's father find out that the piece was missing?
When did he find out?
Yeah, when they were fooling around with it and the father
No,
wasn't...
no. I don't know the exact details because I'm only getting the report from Jill.
Okay.
And it looks like they had it about a week. And the boy had it on his own for a day or two and was so enchanted with it that he just had to share it with his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And Jill was his best friend. And at some point, his father must have found it missing from wherever he kept it in the house, at which point the kid got in much trouble and, you know, they went over to Jill's place and demanded that it came, you know, be given back.
Uh-huh.
And really scared, you know what, out of her because
yeah.
He said he could lose his job, his family could be hurt. He went on and on, and he said, you know, he threatened her basically, you know, to never, ever say this or tell anybody ever. And she's 69 years old now, and that's when she finally decided to tell it. And the thing that surprised me, I had been asking her to tell her story since about 2008, and she always gave me an answer, you know, well, I'll think about it. And I was really kind of surprised when she finally said, well, it's time, and she let me do the interview, you know, just real recently.
Oh, that's fabulous. Wasn't it because just about everybody else had passed, like John's dad was gone?
Right. They've all died.
They've all died.
She knows that no matter what, she can't get these guys in trouble.
Yeah.
But she's a very, very honest person, and she actually had to wrestle with her own conscience about, you know, coming forth and telling her story to be shared with the public because she's one of these people, kind of old-fashioned, but if
sure.
I give my word, I'm going to keep my word. So she had to wrestle and came up with the greater good that people really needed to know it. And it was not an easy decision for her to make. Obviously, if it took her 8 years from the first time I tried to get a story out of her.
That's amazing.
Which is about the most patience I've ever had for a story, by the way.
She just decided it was finally time to just,
it was
just
finally
come through.
Time, yep. Yeah. But I hope that when people have... a little extra time, they can go and listen to it. And we tried to make it more interesting. There's this great gal who sometimes helps us out with the website, and her name is Cindy, and she went and found old photos, even from Wright-Patterson, and the old irons and the old ovens and everything from that time period. So there's imagery going with the audio, which
yeah.
is all that I originally had.
It's well done.
Yeah, we watched the video the other night, and
yeah.
it is. It's very interesting. Very well done.
That was a very cool idea. Well, moving on, how about, you know, you wrote your book, Cherokee Little People Are Real. Are real or were real? Are real, right?
The original book was called Cherokee People Were Real, and... there are a number of Cherokees who still tell me that in the remote parts of the reservation here in North Carolina, that there are still little people. I've never been able to get a really good witness who would come forward and,
mm-hmm.
and really go public about it. But the evidence in the book is about the little skeletons that were child-sized but had wisdom teeth. There were a whole lot of tunnels, that very small tunnels with rounded tops, that were found throughout the campus where Western Carolina University is located. And when they were cutting into supposedly virgin soil, they found a network of these all over the campus. And was it the very first time, I think it was on your show, that we did
yes.
talk about that
yes.
and went into it in more depth? But this latest thing, and it's because of that book, that we were contacted by this man who lives in eastern Tennessee, and he said he had little people still living on the land.
Didn't that blow your mind?
And me and Evelyn Gordon, who's the co-founder of this website, to come to his property. And I took my camera, and I didn't get pictures of little people, but we've got the footprints. We've got the entrance to their underground facility. There's a photo where, well, I should paint a picture better than this. The man has close to 200 acres on a rolling land up along a river, and most of the land is wild woodland, which is where these little people actually live. The front part of the property is pasture land, rolling hills, large rolling hills. And when we first got there, he took us up to the top of this one hill so that we could overlook the river. Well, when we got up there, he goes, oh, my goodness. And there was a fresh round circle where the taller grass had been beaten down. And he said, that's the place where the little people will come and sing and dance.
Wow.
And little people don't weigh very much.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we were looking for footprints, and he did find one underneath the tree. But, you know, unless it's damp, you know, it's hard to get those kind of footprints.
But there is
a
picture.
We did find little tiny square holes in one of the paths, and he said that the little people lived to be about 200 years old, and that the older ones will sometimes use a walking stick, and he said that they're square cut. And you could actually see this little sliver of a path that went to the underground entrance, which was behind, you know, trees in the forest area or the woodland area. And, you know, I just found it all quite fascinating.
Mary, when he told you about this, this was Mr. Zander, correct?
His first name, Zander.
Oh, Zander's his first name. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How did you know that maybe he was just seeking attention? Because, well, he took you to a hole in the ground, but how did you know that was actually a hole to their entrance?
There's no way that I could personally vouch for it, except I could see this little sliver of path, and I could see these little tiny depressions that he told me about.
But you saw a footprint, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I have photos of the footprints on the website and the path and the entrance and the place where they danced. And, you know, sometimes the stories that people tell you are odd ones that make it more believable because they're just too weird,
yeah.
You know, for somebody to make them up if they're trying to convince you of something.
Yeah, you just
and
can't
one
make
of the stories
up.
That he told us was that he hired several people to help him with the fencing around the pasture land. And he said that they were from another country. I suspect that they might have been from, you know, Mexico, but he never said that.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point he looked over and he saw them all just running for the car, lickety-split, and mm-hmm. just disappeared. And he couldn't understand, you know, what had happened. He thought maybe they had been hurt and they had rushed to the hospital. He did see them one time after that, and he asked what happened. And they kind of shyly asked him if he had ever heard singing in the fog. And he said yes. And at that point, they decided he was some kind of a wizard. called him some kind of a name, which I believe was Spanish, and they wouldn't even take the money for the work that they had done. They
Amazing.
Just split because they figured he was some kind of a wizard. And then he explained that there's a lot of fog that will come off the river, and when that happens, sometimes the little people like to dance when there's fog. Maybe it's because they can't be seen. I don't know.
Well, isn't that what Zander's father said? And then apparently Zander's father was very sensitive and he communicated with the little people. And after he passed, that was one of the stories that he heard them sing in the fog that he decided.
I didn't hear the last part of that.
That Zander's father had said he heard them singing in the fog and that he had.
Oh, this man, Zander, has too.
Oh, he has?
Yeah, that still happens.
Oh, that's amazing.
This land has been in the family for two centuries. And so both Zander, his father, his grandfather, and I think his grandfather all have been able to interact and communicate with the little people. Now, this is where it really got interesting, and I had to do my own research after the interview. Xander explained that in the same land in eastern Tennessee that there was a tribe called the Uchis, and it's spelled either Y-U-C-H-I or U-C-H-E-E. He said they were different than the other tribes, that they actually looked much more like Europeans and had lighter eyes. And, you know, he's going on telling me these things, and I'm going, okay. So when I get home, I start doing lots of research, and I can't quote it over the phone, you know, unless, because I don't have it right in front of me. But there is a man, I think his name is Robert Thornton, and he is one of the experts in southeastern Indians. And mm-hmm. he had discovered, just shortly before I wrote this article, I think it was dated May 6th or May 8th of this year, that they had found archaeological evidence that there was a major flood in Ireland, also hitting France and I think Spain or Germany, and the people fled from Ireland or they drowned. And this was back in 2250 B.C.
Wow.
And this researcher said that some of those people who escaped managed to get by boat and land in Savannah, Georgia, and then ultimately they went like up the rivers to you know, the Tennessee area. And so here was somebody with information that Xander didn't know, because it had just come out right, you know, just before mm-hmm. I'd interviewed him. And he knew nothing about it, because I checked with him later. And it gave evidence or testimony from a credible person that indeed this was a very unique tribe. Well, then I started to put two and two together, because when Xander talked about the little people, he didn't describe them anything like the Cherokee little people. He described them as wearing leather pants, sort of like lederhosen, and like knee-high socks,
uh-huh.
and little shirts that were like almost double-breasted, but two rows of buttons.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that he described didn't fit any image I'd ever heard of with little people. Well, if indeed the Uchi Indians were originally Irish, perhaps some of the Irish little people came with them.
Irish
food for thought, anyhow.
Or German, too.
Yeah, he said they weren't exactly that way, but certainly not like the Indians.
So what would be the connection between...
Lynn, can you turn up my volume a little? I mean, not for my volume to turn up, but for yours to turn up.
What would be the connection between the Uchi then and the little people of Tennessee?
Between what and...
The Uchi Indians and the little people of Tennessee. What is the connection?
They're in the same area, and both the tribe and the little people from that area are described as having more European features with the lighter eyes.
Okay.
And that's certainly not the description we get from the Cherokee little people.
No, but there is a difference in the height, right?
I don't think so. He described them as being... Usually, he said everything from like 3.5 feet, which is what I hear with the little people here, but no more than 4 feet. And like I said, that's the same height that I hear here in North Carolina.
Oh, so there is a connection between the Uchi Indians and the Tennessee little people.
It seems that
seems
there
to
is.
Be. That's amazing. You also said...
And because... Xander says that he believes he's a watered-down Uchi Indian, and that perhaps that's the reason there has been this bond with his family over two centuries.
Oh, that's amazing. I don't remember the source, but you did have it on your website that says, "Thus it appears that the oldest tribe in the Southeast was neither ethnically nor genetically American Indian."
Good for you. I'm glad you had that.
So that's pretty interesting, because even in Savannah, Georgia, they found pottery, right, that dated way back.
Right, that's correct.
Like the 2250 B.C., was it, that you mentioned?
Well, the flood in Ireland that caused them to escape was recorded, I mean, the geological evidence and archaeological evidence was 2250 BC.
Yeah, wow. Very old. That's amazing. What do you think, or do you think there is a connection between the Cherokee Little People and then the Little People of Tennessee? Do you think there's some connection there?
I don't think so.
Wow.
I don't think so. Other than this, well, I shouldn't say that so confidently, because both the Cherokee Little People and the Uchi Little People live underground. And
yeah.
So that's a common denominator. And who knows what goes on underground? I mean, there's...
Truly.
Who knows? There just might be a connection down there that none of us on the surface would know about.
Well, they mentioned both Ireland and Germany, so it makes you think, what about the little people of Ireland? I mean, they've got those legends they've had them for a long time.
Right.
So that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'd never, ever pieced any of the, I mean, I didn't even know about the Uchi tribe, to be very, very, very honest. And so I've done a lot of reading and a lot of research, waded through all sorts of stuff because I'd like, if I possibly can, to look for confirmation for things that I've never heard before. And I certainly hadn't heard any of this before.
When I hear about different tribes that I haven't heard of, I'm always interested in knowing what their language group is, what group they descend from, because there are several major language groups, and then they sort of splinter off into their own tribal names. And I think that comes from having been isolated in certain geographical locations.
Right. Now, I do know that from the research I've done that there is no similarity between what the little what the Uchi Indians speak and any other tribe in America.
Yeah. And you also went on to say there are rumors that some early explorers came through the area and found that the Uchi could translate English and German well.
Right, and according to Zander, now I have not gotten confirmation of this, but according to Zander, the Uchi Indians served as a translator or as translators for other tribes. Well, then I found out, going back to Savannah, that the Uchi may have been involved in trading salt. If they were involved with trading like that, they would have to learn how to communicate with the different tribes.
Yeah.
And so that may explain why they were able to learn the different languages of the people.
Oh, that's fascinating. This is stuff that you don't see printed up in history books, you know?
No, I mean, absolutely not. I was amazed at what came out of this story.
Oh, it's funny when all the little pieces of the puzzle fit or are corroborated.
Well, you even have to wonder, that article, which was hard to find, had only been printed, I think it was May 8th, as I mentioned earlier, or May 6th, right at the time that I'm doing this research. If I had done it, you know, just a couple weeks earlier, I wouldn't have even found that information. And so that in itself seems almost magical to me.
Yeah, very synchronistic. It makes you wonder.
Right.
Well, Mary, we're just about here at the bottom of the hour, so before we get on to another subject, I thought maybe we'd take a break now, and we'll come back in just a couple of minutes. We're
all
talking
right
to Mary Joyce. She is the website master of skyshipsovercaches.com, and we'll be back in just a minute, so please don't go away. Supernatural Magazine, the UK's newest paranormal magazine, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. You are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on WSCA 106.1 FM, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Thank you.
And Lynn, you have some upcoming guests.
Our upcoming guest list starts with June 11th. David Saunderson will be our guest. He's the UK's website webmaster of Spooky Isles. And his site is fashioned similarly to Supernatural magazine. And he'll be coming on to talk about, he covers a lot of paranormal topics, but we're going to be focusing on banshees and little people of Ireland. June 18, Varla Ventura will be joining us. She's just recently written a couple of books, and a lot of them focus on oddities and unknown creatures. But on the 18th, she'll be talking about banshees, werewolves, and vampires. June 25th, Robin Bellamy will be joining us to speak to all of us about the Mothman. And she offers a lot of lectures on this. July 2nd, Willie and I will be having another discussion show with call-in opportunities, and the topic is to be determined. July 9th, we're going to be off for a vacation. And July 16th, we're welcoming Susan Spuler and Willie Miranda, who are the organizers of the Greater New England UFO Conference in Leominster, Mass. And that's a yearly conference. And they'll be focusing on discussions surrounding the New England connection between Sasquatch and UFOs. So that wraps up our guest list, Willie.
Okay, well, let's go back to the phone then for tonight's guest, author and editor of the website skyshipsovercaches.com, Mary Joyce. Welcome back to the show, Mary.
Welcome.
Thank
back.
You. I'd like to hear that show on the Sasquatch. That sounds like it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, it does sound interesting.
Be sure and tune in.
Yeah. Did you happen to hear Kelly and Kuwoni?
I did not. I was out of town.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was truly very interesting. In fact, we could start with that. You've got several postings about Sasquatch. Have you got anything recently that you've posted?
I'm trying to remember what we last talked about, because we did touch on this, didn't we, once before?
Yes, we did. There was a family of Sasquatch that they thought they were younger that were visiting a home.
Right, where they were, you know, essentially. Yeah, basically, that. There's been some things that have happened since then, but that was probably the most attention-getting, because just the essence of it is these people lived between two ridges in a kind of a secluded little valley, and they were using a jackhammer to fix a pond, and they went right through rock into something hollow.
And
after that, they started having trouble with the Bigfoot. Now, normally, I don't hear stories where, you know, you hear the Bigfoot being upset. Usually, people seem to get along and want to protect the Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But in this case, it looks like they flooded their underground place, and they were upset.
Oh.
And so that I think that goes back to the beginning of 2015. It's quite an interesting read. There's lots and lots of photos. They got into the house. We thought that they were probably young ones, at least to some degree, because they started writing on the walls and stuff, and it was like at a low level. I mean, like,
yeah, like oftentimes, kids.
But beneath the light switch. And so I don't think the real full-grown Bigfoot would have squatted down to do that.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. And didn't they kind of make a mess of the place?
Oh, yeah. And the people no longer live there. I think the property is actually in transition. I'm curious to see what's going to happen with it. But the people that gave us the story no longer live there. But,
yeah, I can see why.
That's probably a story waiting in the wings. I have to be patient like I had to be with the gal with the Roswell story.
That would be hard to reconcile moving back
but
into a place.
But since then, we've done a number of things. Everybody always talks about the successes, but maybe you'll enjoy one of the not-so-successful things.
Yeah.
We got a wonderful sample of hair.
Really?
It's kind of curled up. There's a picture of it with the story that I've just been talking about. And that was sent off for DNA testing. Well, what happened was there was no follicles in that hair sample. And the only way, according to Dr. Ketchum, or Melba Ketchum, you have to have the paternal DNA, which comes from the nuclear DNA, and we didn't have it, so we wasted money doing that testing.
Oh.
Well, then we found, you know, there was a place where we were seeing like 16-inch footprints that went down a ridge and then over to an apple tree. Well, we knew from these multiple footprints that there was a Bigfoot going through there, and we knew that they liked the apples off the tree.
Mm.
The DNA lab told us that, you know, scat would be a good way to perhaps get the DNA we needed. Well, we found some really unusual poop underneath the tree, and we thought, you know, with all these footprints around, there's a good chance it could be this. So we sent it off to the lab, and it came back that it was gray fox.
Oh, no kidding.
So we have twice failed miserably at getting the DNA testing. So we're going to be very, very careful before we send something else because our budget can't handle it.
Yeah, that's kind of costly. Mm.
So sometimes, you know, it gets kind of discouraging. We have been very successful, especially during the wintertime, of setting up a site where we leave gifts or food.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the summertime or when it's warm, they don't need the help or they're not as interested. But in the wintertime, they would come and they would take the food that we left. We did leave some actual presents. And what's interesting is some of them they didn't do anything with. There were two things that they took with them. And one was a little butterfly that I had done wood burning into a piece of a disc of balsa wood.
Mm-hmm.
And they took that, and it disappeared for about 6 weeks. And then it was returned.
Oh.
And right now I'm going blank, but we left another gift. And they kept it for, I think, about a week or so, and then they returned it. Well, I talked to Joan Ocean, or communicated via email, and she, a number of years ago, gave us a really great story about Bigfoot on the west coast of this country. And she said that this was not uncommon with the Bigfoot to, like, return the presents. And so I can't explain that, but it seems to be uniquely a Bigfoot characteristic.
Joan Ocean, isn't she the one that communicates with dolphins?
Right. And
okay.
The reason that she even, she lives in Hawaii, and
yep.
That is her major thing is with the dolphins. As far as I know, she's the best known dolphin expert in the world. And really a nice, nice lady. And somebody had contacted her to get information about how to approach the Bigfoot that they were seeing, you know, in the Western Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And just wanted her advice. Well, somehow or another, she eventually, you know, went to the mountains here in the mainland and communicated with two very, very intelligent Bigfoot. I think there's quite a range of abilities, just like with
there
human
is.
Beings. But the ones that she interacted with could actually print messages back and forth,
mm-hmm.
leave paper, and they would write and leave presents. And again, if you just go to our website, skyshipsovercashiers.com, on the home page we have a search bar. It's a Google search bar, and sometimes it will only take you to the index where the story is, so you'll have to skim down for it.
Mm-hmm.
But if the listeners type in Joan Ocean's name, at least two stories will come up, and one of them is about Bigfoot. And it's a good story.
I think it's based on the philosophy, like if you take a Native American artifact, you take it, you cherish it for a while, but you are to return it. And I think that's if they take the pleasure of it for having it for a while and enjoy it, and then they return it.
Well, that may be what the Bigfoot are doing.
That's what I think is going on, but that's just my personal opinion. Mary, I had a question for you. Are you familiar with David Politis?
I have seen him with YouTube's I've never interacted with him in any way. He's the expert on the missing
right
people. Mm-hmm. And he does I think he has at least four books he's done called 411 Missing,
right,
or something like that.
That's right.
And he's done a very, very good job about presenting this kind of a dark side to what's going on in the remote areas of the country and perhaps the world, where an extraordinary number of people, and oftentimes children, just disappear or
yeah
are taken. And
very strange circumstances.
I can
too
tie this back to the story we were talking about with the little people, because they are so afraid of some of the ETs, and the ones that they personally call those who dominate or the dominators,
mm-hmm,
they say, and this gets so gruesome, and if they hadn't said it, I wouldn't even want to print it, but they said that they are so evil that they get their energy by eating people.
Yeah.
And they especially like two-year-olds or little people. And
yeah,
the little people are afraid of them for multiple reasons. But
They would probably be the reptilian variety?
It sounds like their description is, I don't know.
I've heard that association
with them. I
included
the description in the story, but from what I recall, it was a huge, kind of reptilian, but more like a dinosaur.
Right. Yep, that's exactly what I'm getting at. Yeah, because in David Politis' books, I've read two of them now, and of course he's got a Bigfoot website, and I thought, is he implying that it's Bigfoot? I couldn't quite believe that, because it does seem to be such a docile person. But then I read what was said about the Cherokee or the little people's fear of the dominators, and I thought maybe that's what he's driving at. He just doesn't come right out and say that.
Well, I personally don't think that's being done by the Bigfoot.
Well, good. I'm glad to
over
hear that.
The years, we've interviewed a number of people who have interacted with the Bigfoot, and all of the people that have had interactions with them that I've talked to want to protect the Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
They will let me know where they're located and where they're living and where this is happening, but they don't want it posted or the exact location anyhow, because they want to protect the Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And a number of years ago, we did this great story of a man who had to retire from the military early for health reasons, and he chose to find a little house on an old logging road that backed up to the National Forest, and it went straight up behind him. And his story is, kind of lengthy. I won't get into all of it now, but it got to the point where the male Bigfoot would actually come down when this man would be doing his gardening.
Hmm.
And,
take his vegetables.
The man would share food from the garden with him, and apparently there was a pretty good rapport between the two.
Oh, that's great! Oh, I really
so
like to
I
hear
am
that.
The I am at the bottom of the list for blaming the Bigfoot for these disappearances in the forest.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I was actually I had reservations about asking Kelly and Kuoni about that, because they're just so enamored with them, and I thought their dark side can't be that dark.
No, I don't know. In fact, the story I was telling you originally about the house being broken into and
mm-hmm.
they were upset, because their house had been destroyed. Eventually, we did go out there with a woman who's very spiritually attuned, and
mm-hmm.
she went down to where the pond had been worked on and just communicated with them, or tried her best to communicate with them, and the destructive activity disappeared after that.
Oh, I'll be darned.
So they were, and also, anything where it gets out of control oftentimes is like the teenage group of the Bigfoot or of the little people. When I talked to Xander about the little people on his property, he said the ones that are the most curious, the ones that will come out, the most readily, are the teenagers. And he said, you know, they've come up and just out of curiosity touched him. And one story, which is easy to imagine but hard to believe, that he was walking through the forest, and there was one of these teenage ones up in the tree, and it suddenly swung down, hanging from the limb, so it could look right in Xander's eyes.
Oh, my
because
gosh.
Xander has green eyes, and the little people are very enchanted with green eyes. It means something to them, and they've even told them that they do have some family members or friends or whatever who have the green eyes, and they have a great interest in, it's almost like a respect for green-eyed people.
Well, a lot of Irish people have green eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting tie-in.
Yeah, I don't know how I can dig into this deeper, but it certainly makes me want to.
Yeah. Well, moving on, we had two other subjects I wanted to cover, and if we don't have time, how about if I let you pick either talking about underground bases or the Hadron Collider? Which would you prefer to start on?
Well, we could just touch on the collider just, you know, briefly. I think it would be great if you could find some real experts on that subject, you know, who could come in and talk about it.
Yeah.
But we, again, going back to the website, if you just type in CERN Hadron Collider, in the, you'll it should take you to that. And the neat thing about it is it links to a very short video. It's just under 2 minutes. And people need to see it before
they
really start making conclusions about the Hadron Collider. And they need to have the sound on when they listen to it, because you see the swirling clouds forming over where it the collider is located in Switzerland, and they're really dramatic, and you can also hear it. You can hear the whirling sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this UFO that goes into it and then disappears. Now, there's all sorts of theories. You know, some say it sucked the UFO in and, you know, destroyed it. Some say it opened a portal and the UFO disappeared through it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one video that's very short, so almost anybody would have time to listen and look at it. And the easiest way is to just type in CERN Hadron Collider, and Hadron is, if you get CERN and Hadron, you'll probably find it.
Yeah.
And I just think people ought to see and hear that. And then, with that in mind, start finding out the information. You know, people are very concerned about it.
It's terrible.
The world's biggest machine. It's a 17-mile circuit-like tunnel, which has been built close to 600 feet below the ground. Now, if there wasn't a potential for some kind of danger, why would you do something that deep underground?
Yeah.
And it has close to 10,000 supermagnets. Supposedly, it would be like 10,000 times more powerful than the gravitational pull of Earth, and it generates a tremendous amount of heat that's been compared to the heat in the middle of the sun. So when you think about just some of those things, you begin to wonder, well, exactly
what is it?
You know, this could be really dangerous.
What is the purpose?
Our scientists, with their big curiosities, get out there and, you know, wanted to start doing these grand things. And, you know, our scientists didn't know what they were going to create when they did the first bomb.
Yeah.
You know, and look what it did to the people of Japan. And
they're saying that they're searching for the God particle, and also they want to be able to open up a portal for perhaps interstellar or intergalactic travel. That's supposed to be the purpose of it. And I'd been reading, I'd been kind of keeping up on it, and waiting for it to go online. And then I remember last year around November 15th, it was supposed to go online. And according to YouTubes, there are two of them. One says that there was a problem on that the 14-15 date, and then another one says the 20th. But anyway, it was mid-November, and there was a meltdown. There was a fire, and it shut down completely. And then the following April 29 of this year, they use the excuse that a squirrel got in there on the electrical circuits and burnt it out, and that the collider again went offline.
Maybe that's a good thing.
Well, I don't think it was a weasel, first of all. I really no. think that...
I don't either.
Or a bird on the wire.
Right.
I think that probably what might be happening is UFOs keep intervening, you know, with the nuclear weapon silos. Why mm-hmm. could they not be monitoring this and, you know, stopping things before it becomes catastrophic?
That's possible. Another thing that's possible, because they do talk about it as perhaps... and you've touched on it, that it would open up a dimension into other dimensions or other, you know,
yes.
a portal to somewhere. Well, it could also be used for quick travel somewhere. And we have quite a bit of photographic photographs on our website about Mars, and there is evidence that there is active human behavior going on right now. And I don't know, maybe something like that's a fast way to get there.
That's right, which, you know, if there's a good way to do it, fine, but let's not destroy the world in trying to attempt
right.
it, you know?
Right.
It could be catastrophic. Well, how about if we touch on the underground military bases? And you had mentioned, well, there's an article on your website about how in Rogersville, Tennessee, that they... The big changes that are taking place there, there was a conversion from their coal-fired plant, utility plant, to natural gas, and they were saying for environmental purposes, but then they wound up buying 8,000 acres of land surrounding it, and now...
And they've actually, the government has really strong-armed people in the area, essentially forcing them to sell their property, and then they just, you know, cut down their house and clear the land. And at one time, that plant, the people there that were the guards and things like that were very friendly to the people who lived in the area. They had a boat ramp there for the people. They had a picnic in the campground area there. Well, now you can't even get close to the place. And when people have gotten too close, according to the witness, people have even been beat up. There's just a lot of strange things. And in this area, all through the Appalachian Mountains, there is evidence of underground facilities that supposedly are military and secret. I cover five of those in the book, and the short title is Underground Military Bases,
mm-hmm.
Hidden in North Carolina Mountains. And the easiest way to find that might be just to type in Mary Joyce, and maybe the books will come up that way. I don't know, but you can get them through Amazon. But this fits right in with what was in that book.
Yes.
You know.
There's a base that's...
Why is that happening? And the interesting thing is that there aren't power lines coming out from the facility anymore. The lines there either are not working at all, some of them have become very rusty, or there is a set of dual-pole power lines that come into the plant. So where is all the power going?
Very odd.
And the facility that they've added onto it is much, much larger than the original facility. So it's generating a lot of power. They can see smoke coming from the stacks. Where is the power going?
Was the town receiving power, and did the town stop receiving power now?
I'm sorry, what?
Did the town originally receive power and now it doesn't?
That was part, as I understand it, that power plant is part of the, what do you call it? It's like the Duke Energy, you know, with the mountain for the whole region. It's not just for the little town.
Oh, so is it still generating to the surrounding area at all or not?
There is no indication above ground that electrical power is going anywhere out from there.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, Mary, we've just reached the end of the show. I hate to bring it to an end. It's been so interesting.
Well, I always enjoy talking to you, and you're interested in so many things and keep up on so many things.
Always a wonderful site. I think I've read every single article on your site.
Not if you've gone into the archives.
Yes.
I couldn't even catch up with what we have
no.
in there now. So if somebody's really interested in the subject, don't forget the archives.
All right. That's a good Good thought. So anything else you'd like to mention, Mary, real quickly? Find your books on Amazon?
I have three books. The easiest way to find them maybe is just type in Mary Joyce, and hopefully the three books will come out. One is about the underground bases. One is about the Cherokee Little People. One is a total different subject called Tangible Evidence of Jesus Left Behind for Us to Find. And it's archaeological and scientific information that most people just simply don't know.
And actually, yes, if you do just type in your name on Amazon, I did it this afternoon. They all come up.
Oh, terrific.
Good, good. And I wasn't sure of that.
Yep. Okay. And the website is skyshipsovercaches.com.
Right. Everybody, check it out. Wonderfully informative. Thank you so much, Mary.
Thank you, Mary.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
We always enjoy having you on the show.
Have a good evening.
Have a good night. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. And that would be the end of Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience. And Craig Mosier with The Graveyard Shift is coming right up.
That's right. And thank you, everyone, for listening. You have a good evening.
In this one of many possible worlds, all for the best, or some bizarre test, it is what it is.